If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The KC Legend Show on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Live from Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway. Here's your host, Sterling Holmes.
Welcome to the KC Legend Show right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Sterling Holmes here live at Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway. We'll be here until 7 p.m. every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. We'll be here live with special guests, former Chiefs players, getting their inside perspectives on their career, the past Chiefs game, and a look ahead to the upcoming one. Tonight's special guest is former Chiefs defensive end and Ring of Honor member Neil Smith. He will be here in just a moment as we break down, I don't know if I even want to, break down the disappointing game as the Chiefs fall to 8-5. A couple fun things going on here at the casino. Santa's Secret Stash Money Booth from 5 to 9 p.m. on the 16th and the 23rd. If you download the Penn Play app and link Penn Wallet by 11:24, you receive one extra entry into the Penn Wallet drum. Every 30 minutes, up to five winners will get to step into Santa's Money Booth to win as much Penn bonus play as they can catch. A lot of fun special items coming around here at the casino, so make sure to be on the lookout. A lot of fun, including the Night of Gifts, Friday, December 15th. From 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., you can win up to 1,000 pin bonus play. Again, as long as you download by December 13th, you can be entered and have a great chance at getting $1,000 in pin play. That last game last night, as the Chiefs fall to 8-5, was a disaster on multiple fronts, from penalties, from turnovers, from referees, from just the offense stalling. The interesting thing is, we say every single week is, well, if they clean this up, if they clean that up. But at some point, what do we do and just step back and say, this is who this team is, a team that is not talented enough to get over the self-inflicted penalties. You know, last year and in previous years, all of a sudden you see a false start, you see a hold penalty, it's first and 20. It's not a deal breaker. It's not a drive ender. You see it right now with this current iteration of the Kansas City Chiefs, and it sure seems like it is. Kadarius Toney, let's talk about this first and foremost here. Was he offsides? Yes. Was it also a situation where that penalty has been called 11 times this entire season? Also, yes. I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but in the Monday night, or the Sunday night football game, I should say, they called it against the Eagles. I wonder if the NFL was trying to get a little, try and call this a little more so it doesn't seem so out of place. Yet it was called, the electric touchdown was brought back. All right. You want to do this? You ready, Neil? You want to do this, bad boy? You want to have some fun? Chiefs Ring of Honor member Neil Smith is our guest. Neil, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you today?
I am good. You know, I've been better. I'm trying to piece my emotions together after that loss last night. Like, I'm sitting here going, the Chiefs have not been the same Chiefs team in the past few seasons, at least in the Mahomes era, and that's okay. But part of me is so frustrated because this is the best defense we have seen. I know you, obviously, as a Chiefs Hall of Fame defensive lineman, you have an appreciation for this. But when you look at the offense and the massive step back they've taken, the fact that every single week we are stuck here saying self-inflicted penalties, at some point are you saying that's just who this team is, a team that is, quite frankly, undisciplined?
Well, I think everybody have their own opinion to where this team is at right now. And I think that we've gotten, as a city and fans, gotten a lot of where we've gotten a little comfortable, you know, in this, within the last 3 years. Of course, this team slightly struggling right now, you know, losing two games back-to-back. It's unheard of. It's, you know, we kind of getting out of that comfort zone that there's still football. But on the defensive side of the team, they are still the defending champion. Yeah. Now, right now, they are not playing the type of football going into, you know, those previous years that we've had, where we've had, you know, championship type of football, you know, big explosive plays and big defensive plays where it's making a difference. It's been a little, you know, a little raggly here lately, and I think that the fans is seeing it, and of course it's on the news. I just think that the focus is not there, you know. Mainly, sure. I think in that, you know, just take the Tony play last night. It's like, you know, sometimes you could get, as a professor, you can get really, really complacent, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that, you know, if you – and it could come in practice. It could come anywhere in your preparation towards the ball game.
Sure.
And you got to have that focus. Whether you don't dress this week – and, you know, and it's not your call, or you're just going through the motions in practice, when it's time for your number to be called, you got to be razor sharp at all given time that you're going to have to make a play. And this is you're so used to making these plays, and then I think if you get so complacent, these are the type of things that happen, you know.
Yeah, and the thing with Kadarius Toney is I know fans are upset, and hell, I'm upset, because, again, this is a penalty that's been called 11 times all season long. It was called twice, if I'm not mistaken, all last year, offensive offsides. But, again, you look back at the tape, he was offsides. You can't deny it. Most receivers line up correctly, and when they don't, yes, they typically look at the ref. They give him a thumbs up. If you look at the all-22, there's a lot of discrepancy here, because he did actually end up looking over at the referee. The issue was, he did not look there long enough. He did this.
Yeah, he did not point. Back. Yes, exactly. And there's signals that, you know, there are signals that the receivers or somebody say that they give. Well, on the defensive side, we don't have that luxury.
No, you do not.
If you go back to the deep forwards, yep. offsides, when we take that interception and we can go to another Super Bowl and perhaps win it.
Yeah.
You know, during that era, those mistakes, those mental things is what you have to do individually to not allow it to happen in the moment. So you got to, as a professional, you got to look at yourself. You got to say to myself, like, okay, I'm tuned in on every single thing that I have to do. When the ball come to me at a certain time, if it's got to be, I have to have my hands in the right position, or I got to catch this ball to turn up. Your mind is always going when you're playing football, because it's an action game. But then yet you still got to be disciplined. And then you learn that from, you know, when you first start Pop Warner football. You know, well, the ball don't, you can't move unless the ball snap. You know, and so these are the little mistakes that you make. It should be on that professional level, but yet guys get complacent. Mm-hmm. They sit out there and they allow themselves, don't get prepared right, and these things happen. And yesterday just happened at the wrong time. I mean, the absolutely wrong time. One of the greatest plays I've ever seen, you know, in an individual game.
Yeah.
You know, to that you know, Travis Mayweather, his awareness was so good around. I don't know, the way Tony was setting up, it was, almost looked like it was that. I'm going to draw this guy to me, throw it to me. If I catch it, I'm going to run a little bit, just be ready for the ball.
I was going to ask you, I mean, Andy didn't seem too thrilled, but that was also a, when you're talking now about the refs post game, you're not going to be too thrilled. But the play itself, do you think it was designed? Was that Travis Kelce just making something happen? Because my original thought process was that they saw the flag, and I'm wondering if, I know Travis is on the other side, but if he saw that, he probably thought, okay, it's a free play. Now, it's still very risky, because are you going to give up a 25-plus yard gain for a chance at turning the ball over, then you only get a 5-yard gain? I don't know your thoughts in regards
well,
to
I think, that. Well, I think in the light of it, where I look at it, and I've seen Travis do it before, where he throw the ball behind him, he ladder the ball, or some kind of way he's always doing it. So
sure.
I think it's always in his mind when he have to make a play, well, I'm going to look for the next, you know, he might say it to himself in his preparation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take it to another whole level. If I see something, if I draw somebody, you know, he might have drawn it out in his mind. And that those type of things happen when you play this game. You can go back and react like you know, you're playing satellite football.
Yeah.
And it happens. And that's the part of the game. Forward lateral or back lateral is a lateral. And it was just perfect. But it was at the wrong time that we had the penalty. And those are the things. It could have been a holding call. Mm-hmm. It could have been anything. You know, it's just the fact that he was offside. It was bluntly offside. He knew it. I feel sorry for the kid.
Sure.
You know, I feel sorry for him because, you know, it's so unnecessary. You know, for you to, as a guy especially that stands up. Now, if a guy that puts his hand down on the ground every play, it was my idea. And I've did it a few times.
Sure.
Well, I try to cheat the ball And this my helmet might be just saying that. But now they got these lines, these blatant lines that you see blue or red across the screen or perhaps yellow that you can see all the files and stuff. So it makes it so much easier for the individual. And when that line showed up, you could see that his foot was clearly in there. So, and then when they showed the side view, his whole body, I'm like, oh, wow. There's no way you cannot call that play.
No. Neil Smith is our guest as we are here live at Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway for the KC Legend Show right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. In regards to some of the post-game comments, you know, Patrick Mahomes has been the pinnacle of excellence on and off the field. You rarely see him get as heated as you saw him last night in the pressers there. And I think it's just the emotions bubbling over. And first, I don't think it's a great look, but I'd love to get your thoughts on Andy and Mahomes and the team in general talking about the referees. And my other thought process is, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. Not necessarily with the Chiefs, but in general, when you are playing at the highest level, the sport at the highest level, everyone who plays in the NFL, they're alphas. They've always been the best in high school, the best in college. They get to the NFL, and what's going to happen when you have all the adrenaline flowing? Someone makes a call that you think is blatantly wrong, of course you're going to get upset. So I'm always surprised you don't see players blow up more on referees. But I wanted to get your thoughts here just in regards to the post-game comments.
Well, I think the reason why players, and I'm going to go back to what Coach Reed said, but I think the reason why the players don't do it is simply the fact that, you know, you're going to get a heavily fine.
Yeah.
It's so out of Pat, you know, the way he act and how he presents himself to the league. I thought maybe he would have blew up last week, you know, over the no call, then this call right here, and how he handled it very professionally. Like, hey, you know what? Maybe I should have threw the ball a little farther, or, you know, and he could have caught it on a stride. You know, it was very professional. Like, wow, man, that I'd have been blowing up. Like, man, why y'all didn't make this call? But yet, then the call was made, and it was a hell of a play, and it was at the right time. I think it was all, you know, the drone flooring and stuff. He got angry. And, you know, angry you can get. I'm sure he won't get fined. But I don't know if he mouthed enough to get a flag to get fined. Who knows?
Sure.
You know, it's not about taking the money away from the players. It's about the players playing the game.
Sure.
And we get so caught up. And people don't understand that, man. You know, the preparation of going into a football game or going into the week of a game, it takes a lot of mentally, physically, and mind-boggling, besides the physicalness on the field. You know, getting prepared for it, you know, if it comes down to one play, well, you know, you got to almost know that a play can happen like that and be clean. And you now, you sitting on the other side of Buffalo, how are we allowed this to happen two times
back
to
back.
Us? You know, back to back. So, I can understand the frustration, you know, and I know Coach Reed can always have his guys back, especially Pat, you know, because he is the face of the NFL. Was it a good look? Probably not, but the kid get a chance to look at it again and say, you know what, next time I know that I can't react as much or I can't say so much back to the referees because of the call. Now, maybe we might get the calls now. You never know. You know, it could turn at any time. The no calls are now the calls that's happening. But, yeah, we still got to do some of the things that we got to clean up to get back to that level of football, championship football that I know this team can, you know. Cleaning it up, you know, like catching the football, you know, running, you know, protecting the football, you know, the turnover ratio, everything that's had to need to be happening.
We've been saying it for 14 weeks, and we keep saying, you know, it's Andy Reid and this offense and Mahomes and Travis, and it's going to get figured out. At some point, though, I have to sit back and say, if it happens for 14 weeks, why is week 15 and on going to be different? Do you see a fix in season? Do you see a fix? Obviously, when the offseason comes about and there's going to be money freed up, and I guarantee you, Brett Veach, we saw what he did with the offensive line.
Sure.
We saw what he's done with the defense over the past couple of seasons. I guarantee he is going to go in and revamp this wide receiver core. But what we have right now, what we're looking at and witnessing, do you think they can get it done this season? Can they fix the issues that plague them so far?
Well, yeah, I can say yes. But I'm like, you know, we're all waiting.
Yeah.
You know, we all sitting there waiting and to see what exactly is going to happen with this football team. And, you know, I think we get so caught, you know, when Mahomes get the ball in his hand, you know, with 2 minutes, oh, he got too much time in his hand. There's no way he's not going to go down there and march and make a play, you know. And we went three and out, and it's like, okay, so we're still in a place where we know what we have, but we have to just get it done. You got to be more focused. You have to have, you know, the chemistry is really not there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of late in the season, but it's just like we need a big play somebody make big plays. And that's what have been the whole run of all of this, these championships and these wins at home with these AFC championship games at home, is that, you know, we know how to make plays. And guys is just not stepping up making plays. Defensively, we're playing pretty good, playing good football. Yeah. If we're going to win it, you know what, sometimes you can win it with a defense. You know, it's a great defense. The Ravens did it in years past. The Giants did it. A whole lot of people have done it, you know, over the previous years. So, you know, the offense, I'm not really worried about, you know, them. You know, once we get some guys healthy, you know, Pacheco, you know, plays a key part of a running game and getting them healthy and getting that balance offense. I think that, you know, still the team. Now, this team's going to have to take a deep breath. They're going to step back. And they just got to look and see what's in front of them. And the main objective is they got to play one play at a time. You know, they got to take it now one game at a time. Because if you overlook, you know, when you got a team behind you that's hot or whatever, or you cannot afford to lose another one, you don't want that going into the football game. You actually want to go and focus on what you do best. And I think that that's when I know Coach Reed will put it behind him and let this team and get this team back on the right track.
Neil Smith is our guest as we hear live at Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speed with the KC Legend Show right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. The Neil Smith rule.
Yeah.
It's a fun one. You have a rule named after you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, any time the way you can get a niche, you got to use it, you know. It came about, it was this, I was in a game one time and an arrowhead is so loud. You know, when we first got, you know, back in the 90s, and it continues today, it's, you know, the rule is simple. It is. I was rolling off the ball trying to anticipate a count, but I was a little fast, but I caught myself in the midair on my toes, and the guy jumped it from me. I'm like, oh, wow. He did that, and I got the penalty. I'm like, oh, cool. So in my mind, I'm going to wait until the perfect time happening, and then I'm going to try to do this again. It was third and short instead of third and long. Me and Derek like it third and long instead of third and short. I kind of iffed at him a little bit, and he jumped again. I'm like, cool. Well, I got a weapon now. I'm using this. I'm not going to tell anybody nothing. Everybody see. But it actually worked in advantage of us. You know, and I used it for maybe 2 or 3 years, and they just shut me down. So you just can't do it anymore. It's just like you can't iff away. You can't if at a guy. And then I sit down, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. The offensive players knows the snap count. They know the plays. They know everything about it. We can't move until the ball snap. And I can't even scratch my butt before the scratch. And I'm offside. It's like, come on, man. But it's gets the stone. And, you know, it was an advantage. But I still don't think it's cheating today.
Sure.
Because they got everything. Every time a defensive guy get a rule that they figure out something, I always feel like the league's going to change into the offense because the league is offense driven. I really do. And now when I see guys that's out there now punching, like, you know, man, I would just play with one hand, you know, put a boxing glove on it. The way they're punching at the ball and getting it out, it's like, man, I'm like, wow, man, you know, why I didn't think about that? So, you know, if someone thought about it and if someone did it, and now it's become a thing. You know, are they going to still let them punch it out? You know,
was it Deacon Jones that had the head slap? And
they banned that too. Man, I'm telling you, the double head slap, Deke, pop, pop. I mean, you got your head ringing, man. So it's a part of the game, man. It's a part of finding it. It's fun, and you love to give back to the crowd because I remember my all-time record, I think I got, and he actually played here, Reggie McElroy. He was one of my teammates. He played for the Raiders, and the offensive tackle got hurt, and he came into the game. I think I might have got him 4 times in a row. And that's probably the record. He probably killed me because I think Reggie's still living in town somewhere around here. But he did not like that flinching, man. He did not.
We'll have to get him on the show with you.
That'll work.
Unless you try to block it out of his memory.
No, I think he tried to block it. He can't block it. He can't block it.
Speaking of blocking, I think Wanya Morris did a great job as a rookie filling in for Donovan Smith right there at left tackle. When you face a rookie left tackle, rookie offensive lineman, obviously you had your move that you did. But in today's NFL, how would you try and attack a rookie offensive lineman? How do you make him uncomfortable?
Well, I've always put the fear of God in the first. You know, I'm just being honest with you. I'm like, I mean, I'm not going to let the rookie stay with me for 60 minutes. You're going to have to break. I've always said to myself, like, I'm not going to let this young guy block me all day long. Yes, he can. Yes, he will. Some plays, you know, you can't win them all.
Sure.
But you got to let him know, and you got to let him know early that you're going to be with me for 60 minutes like this. So, you know, back – and another thing was really good forte what we had is we could speak to other guys and talk trash. But now, you know, that isn't even exempt anymore. So I don't know how guys do it. They help each other up and, you know.
Who's the best trash talker on the team?
That I ever had.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever.
Best
probably,
trash.
You know, back in the days, Bill Moss was probably one of them. And then, you know, you go on Dale Carter, you can hear him talking, yapping back in the cross. And some of the guys just didn't say anything. But besides myself, I mean, Derek did a lot of it. But we had a bunch of guys that, you know, that really talked a lot of smack. And you got to do it, man, because it's a part of the game. It motivates you.
Sure.
It gets them to thinking about what they're not supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
and these things happen.
It's the Reggie Miller effect right there.
That's what it's called.
Got to get in their head.
Got to get in there.
In regards to the defensive line, you know, Carl Loftus has really stepped up in his second year.
Yes, sir.
Chris Jones, even if the sack numbers aren't there right now, I'd love to get your thoughts on this as well. You know, he's obviously very, very talented, but he's getting double-teamed. He's getting triple-teamed at times. Mike Dana's been an unsung guy perpetually out there on the edge. Charles Amenihu, obviously now back from suspension. He's been solid. But I've been very impressed with the defensive line as a whole. What have you seen so far?
I love it. I love it. I love the way they move Chris around in different places. You know, he can play outside, inside. If I can just tell him personally, take the outside and let it be your baby. But he's such good inside because he's so good with his hands inside. You know, he rushed half a man's. The speed-wise on the outside, he still gets to the quarterback. Colossal man, I love this. I mean, he's Charlie Hustle to me.
Yeah.
The kid can make plays. He's going to grow into it. This is just his second year. He's getting better every year, and that's what it takes. It takes between that window of 3 to 4 years for a guy to really come on. And this kid is really, really coming on to where he's going to be a pretty solid player. So, they got a good line. They got a D line. The D line comes, you know, our backs is pretty solid. And you know, we could screw it up a little bit tighter in our secondary. I think that, you know, our linebackers are, you know, they fly around. They fly around, so I think that we I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to panic on this football team by any means. I know they'll get it together. I know they're going to be angry about it. But you know what? Sometimes you can't let the game come down to the referees. You hear it all the time. You could be at home in a way. It's still the same deal. It's like when you put it in the referee hand, if it's become one play, then it's a play that, you know, it might don't turn in your favor because sometimes it always do come down to that play.
Yeah, and you mentioned just the nuance and the growth of, you know, your first year to second year to third year. Looking just at your career, 2.5 sacks your rookie season, 6.5, then 9.5. You really started to all of a sudden explode. What really starts to click around that time?
I think your growth, you on learning the game, you having a feel for it. It's maturity, man. I'll tell you, it's like, you know, it helped me when I had a guy named Terry Thomas that came out from day one and, you know, can run and turn the corner like that. And I'm like, man, so I kind of learned off of him a little bit, you know, some moves and different things. And then we competed, man, competing every game. You just jump up. My rookie year, I believe I was out like 7 games or 8 games before I could even hit the field. So me getting 2 sacks was really good in that, because that season felt like it was very short, you know, with the first injury. And think, you know, looking after that, I wasn't injury prone. You know, I went through that injury, and I was hurt, and I played hurt throughout the whole season, but yet I was still solid to play those games throughout and have a great career.
I'm trying to say this all right now as well to make a point of FAU. Felix Enyedike Uzomah, the rookie first-round draft pick from K-State. I see some fans, you know, they're out there on Twitter, on X, taking shots, like, why can't he get on the field? And I'm sitting here going, well, when you have Carl Loftus, who is a motor, he's an engine, he's out there 80% of the time. When you have Chris Jones, who kicks out to edge on certain pass rushing situations, when Mike Dana has been just very solid, when Charles Amenihu was your big offseason signing,
sure,
you're not going to play the rookie a ton, especially when you think you are in this Super Bowl, you know, it's Super Bowl or bust. You don't really have time to bring along a rookie defensive end when you're having success with the other guys. You know, would you tell all those folks to pump the brakes when it comes to judging FAU and his inability to get on the field so far?
Absolutely. It's just slow down because, you know, with this young man, he's going to get his opportunity, and he knew it. And if I could tell him today that patience is always the key, brother. But if you can get what myself or somebody on them off season and make yourself work, show you some few moves. You know, you come back on your second or third year. I ain't trying to coach him, but I really love to work with him.
Yeah.
Because I know, I've seen him up at K-State. I know what he can do.
Yeah.
So he's long, he's rangy. You know, he got an ability to get to the quarterback, and I know he can. And you know what? You got guys in front of you, it should make you better, because now it's time for you to learn what they're doing and do it better.
Yeah.
Put it in your mind, and then it'll make yourself go. But you got to put into what you get out of it. You know, if you're just going through the motion, you're going to take the mad rush, as they would say, and not learn from, you know, the guys that's in front of you, then that's when you you're going to fall short. So don't get comfortable where you're at, because you never know, your number going to get called, and maybe sooner than ever. So that's the only good advice I can give you.
Chief Ring of Honor member Neil Smith is our guest right here as we are live at Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway. We will take a quick break as the KC Legend Show rolls on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back to the KC Legend Show right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sterling Holmes again live at Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway until 7 o'clock. We are joined by Chiefs defensive end, Ring of Honor member Neil Smith. We were talking right there in the break. You're right. You don't see this a ton anymore, and that's defensive linemen getting their hands up in a passing league.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned it. Back in your day, your hands were always up if you were not going to get to the quarterback. And we talked about it. J.J. Watt was notable.
Yes.
And that was about the last real defensive lineman that's been notable for consistently getting their hands up and knocking down balls. Why?
That's almost better than a sack. I'm just being honest with you. Sack is huge when you can get your sack numbers up. And I don't know if they even keep the stats. But I see the windows, like I was telling you earlier, I see the windows that the quarterback has, whether you're a tall guy or a short guy like, you know, Russell, and they have this big wide window that they open, and the guys just want to get to the ball. But the hardest thing for a guy to do is see through another guy, aim with his hands up, and hit a guy. I probably tip more than 200 balls, put my hands on them at the line of scrimmage or around the line of scrimmage, where the play is. Three, and we off the field. I don't care. Oh, it's tipped in an interception. Once you put that ball in your hand, or that tip that ball, it can go in anybody's hands.
We need a Neil Smith, young dude, little school here. We need a class. We got to have a better name than that, than young dude school hosted by Neil Smith.
It's all good.
But I think we're on to something here.
Sure.
You got to work with these young guys here. In regards to the defense as a whole, again, they're not very opportunistic in regards to forcing turnovers, right? McDuffie's a cornerback. He's peanut punching the ball out, right? And that's great. But as far as interceptions go, you don't see Legarius, who's been locked down. You don't see McDuffie, who's been very, very good, get a lot of interceptions. Do you think this is an effort that the Chiefs are trying to teach, saying, hey, that's fine, but turnovers are fluky. We prefer you to be in the hip pocket of a defender, because you've noticed Legarius Sneed, what does he do against wide receiver ones?
He locks him down.
He locks him up.
Yeah, he locks him up. There's no question. He's one of the best ones we got back there.
What do you think of the philosophy? Again, this is my opinion here, but the philosophy the Chiefs are rolling out here of, hey, we prefer you to be locked down rather than opportunistic.
Well, I just think that if you look at it, going into a football game, you always want to win the turnover battle. And every coach is going to say that if we win the turnover battle, we get the ball more than they do. And for us, turnover, our opportunity to win this football game is way, way more better than they have an opportunity to win it. And in crucial moments, those things happen. Our secondary play right now, it's been pretty good. You know, to the point where, you know, we haven't given a lot of points up. You know, it's just, if you look at it, they've been playing pretty solid defenses, and you know, it's not the worst in the league, but yet they can apply pressure, and I love the way, you know, they do it, how to disguise, because you don't know who's coming, and how to disguise to get to the quarterback with the blitz. And I just think that, you know, once, you know, these last few weeks, you're going to start seeing some different things happening. I don't know why I feel like, you know, the Chief is people, our fans are not going to quit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Our fans are waiting for our great team to come back. And this is where I think that this is the time that if they're going to make the turn, you're going to make it. If not, we have to be doing something we never did. We're going to have to go on the road.
Yeah.
You know, and win it on the road. And that's not a good taste, because we had never been that way.
Yeah.
It's been so easy for us to win the two and then we end at home. So, It's going to be interesting because, but the matter of the fact is still is in Kansas City's favor.
Yeah.
It's in their hands, and we still have our great quarterback. We still have a great tight end, and I'm sure they, the leaders that's on that football team is going to, you know, going to have a sit down and say, okay, let's get this thing together. Let's get back to where we are at.
So obviously you have experience with this. I know some Chiefs fans might not be happy, but you won two Super Bowls with Denver. I know that makes you very happy. But what is the how much is there actually to the playoff experience? How much does that ring true? How much does that actually matter when you get to the playoffs? A team like Kansas City, who's been there, they've done that. When you look at other teams in the AFC, Lamar Jackson has not had the playoff success. You know, Josh Allen, the Bills, they've done great in the regular season against Kansas City, but not in the playoffs. Jacksonville, they won one game, but again, they eventually lost next round to Kansas City. How much actually comes in truth is there to having that playoff experience, the advantage over the other teams?
Well, the advantage is we want to be home, first and foremost. But the advantage that we've had, we've been through the storm. And some of these players, I mean, look at Lamar Jackson. He's still right now for only won one playoff game. And everybody looking at that, but yet they're playing great football on the defensive side. And now, so that's probably, it's going to be some teams that we're going to have to see, you know, on the road. Miami haven't did it, you know, two of them haven't did it. So, and Josh Allen them only won maybe a few himself, you know, in the past year. So we've gotten to the pyramid of our highest goal and we've have beat the threshold. We went through it. You know, and now we, you know, so we know how to win championships, and we know the preparation to do it, but then now it's up to the players, the individual players, not going outside the box of what their goals are set on, but just staying in within the system and trusting that it would do, trusting that the system would work, but then yet still allow yourself to make yourself make plays. And that's what it's about. It's about making plays. How many plays we can make better than them? How many turnovers we can get more than they can?
You brought up a really good point, and it's playing in the confines of the system and making plays in the confines without trying to do too much. And I think the best example of this was the Raiders game when the Chiefs scored 31 points a couple weeks ago in the second quarter through the fourth quarter, right? In three quarters, they put up 31. What was it? It wasn't the old 2018 Chiefs. It wasn't Tyreek Hill, you're catching 50-yard bombs. It was taking the smart play. How many bad throws did Mahomes make? How often were the wide receivers not on the same page? How often was Mahomes under pressure? What was the defense doing? And I'm sitting here going, For me, I thought that was a turnaround of the season.
Sure.
I thought second quarter on from that game, I go, the Chiefs figured it out. They're running the football effectively. Mahomes has time. He's taking what is given. And yet they reverted back. For me, as someone who watches every single week, every single game, every single snap, it's frustrating when you think you have. And again, it's more fresh for the players, obviously,
when
you have something figured out. But what is that like for the players in the locker room? Is that a situation when you're like, we know what to do, but we think we can go outside? You're so used to seeing this team be so explosive. And when they're having to try and find a different configuration, a different iteration, it almost feels like a step back. But in reality, again, when they take care of the football, they win the turnover margin, what happens? You put up 31 in three quarters.
When you play good, solid football on all three phases of the game, you can see everything just falls into your place. You know, if you look at it on the NFC side, you look at the Dallas Cowboys, you know, 3 weeks ago, they were ready to throw Dak off all in his head. Now they're talking MVP because he won three games in a row and played against the first team that, you know, have a winning record. But I'm just saying this league is all about conversation. But the men that's in that room or that's in that locker room, they know what they have, and if they have that feeling like, you know, like it's going to happen in camp the way it's going to happen, I think that you have not seen the best out of them yet. They just have to get it. They have to get that chemistry back, and they have to trust and believe that man that you playing next to is going to be there. And that's what it is. That's when you don't think about the individual stats or what you're going to get at the end, if you're going to get, you know, player of the month, or if you're going to, you know, lead the league in sacks or whatever. It's just that you got to put that all behind and say, what is the ultimate goal? Why are we really here? And if you don't have that, you know, you could throw the championship out the window. But I think that we have an opportunity still yet, you know, being the defending champion. And I don't think, you know, right now, I'm going to be honest with you. If I look at the league right now, I don't think no one's scared of us. No. Like we used to put the fear of people in it. And it really feel like they caught up with us. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, we have to then now know that two things is happening to you. You're not playing good football. You're defending champion. And everybody that you face is going to play you the hardest they ever played you.
Yeah. Neil Smith is our guest right here live at Hollywood Casino. You were the second overall draft pick, right, in 1988. Obviously, the Chiefs made their intentions known pretty early that they were going after you. They had to trade up from 3 to 2 to make sure they got you, right, with the trip to Detroit.
Yep.
Were you happy the Chiefs were trading up to get you? What was your thought process at the time? Were you a little bummed you didn't go 1-1? Was there any thought of you?
Well, I should have been 1.
Yeah. You look back, you definitely should have been 1.
No, I should have been 1. Well, you know, the funniest thing is that, you know, once Andre Bruce then became the one pick, he came off the board, and they struck a deal with him off, you know, beyond that, then I didn't know where I was going to go. The only thing I remember is that, I'm going to be honest with you, Al Davis was in the fourth spot. And I got a call saying that tomorrow we're going to pick you as a band of radio. I remember, never forget, that was Al Davis' final words to me. And he said, whatever you do, please don't say nothing to nobody, don't leak nothing or whatever. And that was like, I was like, wow, I'm going to be a Raider. Like, okay, so I'm going out to Oakland. And now I got to put the bad boy image on, you know. And I'm trying to think about it and like, what I'm going to say about the Oakland Raiders. And then I never forget the commissioner walked to the mic and he said, Detroit is on the clock, and Detroit is not on the clock. And he walked back, and by the time he got to the stage, somebody handed him a letter, and he came back. I'm watching this whole movie, so he came back. I'm like, wow, what is he coming back for that quick? And he's saying, okay, Detroit moved from the second spot down to the third spot, and then Kansas City moves up to the third spot. So Kansas City not on the clock. And I was like, wow, Kansas City's on the clock. And I was like, I'm sitting there not knowing anything, just looking around. Saw him walk off, and he got right there to the end of that to the end of that rail again. And he turned back. I'm like, what? And I'm like, it went so quick. And the next thing you know, Neil Smith, you know, they picked out of the University of Nebraska, Neil Smith. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, and everybody's just like hitting on me, man. Go, man, go. Go. Like, and I'm like, wow, man. I'm like, okay, I gotta go.
Sure.
You know, so Kansas City never said one word to me the whole time.
Really?
Joe Dropped. Never heard anything about him. You know, played right up the street. Had no idea, no knowledge that they was gonna move up or whatever they think it was. But I knew I was high on everybody board because I had a great, great combine and I ran well and did all the things that I was supposed to do to move myself up from the second round to maybe the second guy get picked. And then we had two bowl games, senior bowl games that I played in. And it wasn't the senior bowl. It was actually the Japan Bowl at the time and the Hula Bowl, and went there and won two MVPs back-to-back. And it kind of helped because I always scream. And when I was at Nebraska, I played out of position. I played actually – a tackle spot. I played the tackle. I was inside, and I said to myself, "If I ever get out here, I'm playing the defensive end." So I yelled and screamed to everybody that I am a defensive end. If you draft me as a tackle, I ain't coming. So I let the word get out there real, real quick and real early that, you know, I'm not a tackle. I ain't playing tackle no more because I just didn't like it. It wasn't enough space for me.
Yeah.
And I knew I was a space guy, and I knew once I got that opportunity, the first time I ever did it, you know, in Japan, and I actually went out and went to one of the two MVPs, and the first one I had 4 sacks in the game, and then I had another 4 sacks in the second game.
There you go. So okay, I go back. Here's why.
Yeah, I guess it's called from Charlie McBride, which is my D coordinator back in Nebraska. He said, "Where the hell that come from?" I said, "Well, coach, I've been telling you forever, like you players, I've been telling you, coach, you have to listen to me. I played out of position, and I kept telling him, like, put me on the edge, let me rush." But he wanted Brody Thomas to rush, and he thought Brody was a better rusher than I was. And I had to show him, like, hey, man, you missed a great opportunity. So he knows that he played me out of position, but that's the position that I needed to learn. And you know what? It really helped me in my pro career because not only did I learn in my latter years that I could become a great pass rusher, I knew how to play the run. And I wanted to make that complete player. Okay, so you can't run at him and you can't drop back on him. You're never going to get him on the boot. So you got to find somewhere else to go.
You got to run away.
You know what I'm saying? And if you run away with him, drafting this next guy named Derek Thomas, you ain't going too far. So we're pretty solid, man. And you know, once we saw development team, and it was really good because, and I said this the other day to Duran, I said, man, it was nothing better for me and Derek to come in after we had that secondary with him, Lord Burrs, Duron Cherry, you know, Albert Lewis, and yeah, Kevin Ross. We're all pro guys. It was four of them back there. And one team. And then to start to add the pieces, you know, myself and then Derek, and, you know, this went into the, you know, to the whole format. So it became you know, that was the movement. So, and I think that, you know, Carl Peterson did an excellent job of, you know, starting to change the image of the Chiefs and then changing the people to come out and say, hey, you know what? We might can't score points, because we have a defense you might want to see.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. It was all about defense, man.
Yeah. You were part of that shift, right? So,
yeah.
So what is that like for you when you're playing in that time? You're like, okay, a little different, but let's talk about in today's modern era, the Jets, for example, right?
Sure.
The Jets' defense very good. Offense is struggling. So when you got here, defense is electric. They're elite. Offense has some issues.
Sure.
How hard is it to not get upset with the offense? How hard is it to focus only on the defense, saying, hey, we can control what we can control, but also at times you're sitting here going, come on.
You gotta
help us out here.
You can't take that attitude like that. You know, if you put all in, you can't look at the offense and say, man, they're struggling, whatever. But we had some great moments in teams that we have. You know, we went to two AFC championship games.
Yeah.
It was good, man. I'm like, you know, you don't look back and say, you know, if we would have or could have. You know, it just didn't happen, you know, at the time. And it was known that we had a great defense, but yet, you know, offensively, we just couldn't get over that hump, you know. But I tell you what, if you ever came to Arrowhead and saw anybody that ever came through here, was you was an NFC team or FC team when we started to make that turn, you didn't want to play here.
Yeah.
And this is how the image still today. It is one of the hardest places to play at and try to get through to win it, because it's electrified first and foremost, and then when you make plays, it's even louder.
Yeah. Favorite quarterback to sack, who was it?
John Elway.
And then you went there.
I know you're gonna say that.
And then you went there.
Absolutely. So I've always told John, I'm like, hey, you know what, man? You know, if you look at how many sacks that me and Derek had on you, and he was like, well, hell, I know. I felt them all when I went to him. And then he went on to say, he's like, you know what? I've always told him, I said, if we get one of those guys off of Kansas City, that's like, and we want to get one of either one of you guys.
Yeah.
And he said, we chose you to get to Denver, because you now, we take 10 sacks away from what we've done. And I didn't look at it like that, but if you look at it, I'm like, wow, man, I'm like, okay, that's pretty good domino, you know, some poker move.
I mean, you were there 3 years and won two Super Bowls, so I think the move played off. You were the missing ingredient, if you will. How hard was it for you to go from Kansas? I mean, obviously, as a fan, it's different, right? Because as a fan, you grew up in Kansas City.
Sure.
It's the only team you know. If you're a player and a team's offering you money,
man,
it's a little different. So was it hard for you to make that decision to go from Kansas City to Denver, or was it?
No, it was a business move.
Sure.
I mean, it didn't have anything. And I keep on telling people, a lot of people call me, and they even say this to me today, and I'm like, man, I'm like, you know, that's been like 23 years.
Yeah.
Come up to you, say, you hate me. It's like, come on, man. Hate is a hard word for
that's
me, but yeah.
Harsh.
Like, I look back, and I actually went on a free agent move before I even went to off of Denver. They was the last team that even offered me to come and see them. To be honest with you, I mean, Jerry Jones picked me up downtown airport in the Dallas jet, and we flew from here to Miami, and we went to see, you know, I had lunch with Dion when he was playing with the Braves and stuff. It was sort of talk back and forth with me and him. You know, I went to Philly, I went to New Orleans, I went everywhere. I'm originally from New Orleans, but I went everywhere, and most of them was the NFC team. None of the AFC teams don't seem like they was very interested in. I'm on my way back home, and I get the call and say, hey, you know what? Denver want to talk to you. And first thing in my mind, Denver. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I ain't going to Denver. And, you know, and so my agent, you know, God rest his soul, Eugene Parker, he sat me down and let me know, like, hey, man, you know, if you look at this team, you know, it's nothing but not to look at and see what they have to offer. And so I had to follow protocol because,
yeah,
you know, I know I was not going to get an offer here.
Sure.
So I had to go and it just happened to be there. Now, was it hurtful? Absolutely. It was the most hardest thing I could ever did. You know, walking into the locker room and going to the opposition locker room, you know, and coming out and being booed by the people that I love. And like, but I'm like, man, this is awful. And then the first game that came up, it was actually, I think they kicked the winning field goal against us. So that was even, man. Like, okay, so everybody was happy then, but yet we had to come back the same way to the playoffs. So I, you know, I have no animosity. I have no remorse. You know, at the end of the day, players play the game. You know, agents take care of, you know, the players when they up for contracts, and the decisions made between both, and And I tell people all the time, do not bet your house or put your kids or anybody on the line for gambling. I know we're at a casino now.
But just gamble responsibly.
Yeah, like, just gamble responsibly, man. And I know you got a team, and it hurts that the way we went down the last 2 weeks. But don't give up on your team.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Your team is why you come out and you cheer for. We're going to make the turn. It's going to be okay. You know, it's like it's going to be a tomorrow. You know, it's still a lot of football left in this year. So don't ever give up on your team if you know you still got it.
But what's wild, the Raiders almost drafted you, right? Because that was the thought process there. Then you obviously played a long time with Kansas City, a couple of years with Denver.
Yep.
Play with San Diego, the one team the AFC West couldn't round it up.
Would not play with them because I took it personal after that. Because I really thought it was Al. And Al lied to me. God rest his soul, and may he rest in peace. But Al, Al was one of these guys. He always looked at me. He stood up across that with his white suit on, his glasses, and he'd point it in. So one time I finally got a chance to see Al one-on-one, he said, I want to apologize. You know, when the next time I saw Al Davis, this is God honest truth. And I'm going to say this too, because this is really heartbreaking and whatever. I saw Al Davis right before he passed, but then yet he was in Kansas City. And then the time before then, when Derek had his surgery and he was down in Miami, he said, I'm going to give you 10 guests who sit here all day with me and had a conversation. And I gave him 10 owners' names. And not one time I didn't miss Al Davis. He said, Al Davis. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, my God. So I wanted to see Mr. Davis. And I ain't seen him for about, like, 10 or 15 years. And then I finally said, man, I seen him. It flashed him up there. And I said, man, this is my opportunity. And I went to the game. They wouldn't even let me in the stadium because I didn't have a ticket. But I talked my way into the stadium. And I went up to his suite. And I walked in. And I said, Mr. Davis, how you doing? He looked up and he said, my God, he said, you and Derek Thomas, he said, you are the best two guys I've ever seen. He's like, you guys just gave us hell. And he went into this whole thing, and I said, you know why I'm here? And I said, I'm here to thank you for Derek Thomas, for what you did for him that day, because he thought it was the most best thing that ever happened in his life, that you had an opportunity to sit down and say, Neil, he said, when it's all said and done, we're all still human. And he said, you know, football is just football. And he said, us older owners going to take it with us. But love is love. He said, I love that guy and I love that kid. I would do it for anybody. And I said, Mr. David, that showed a lot about you. For all these years I was mad at you, I'm not mad at you anymore. And I love it. I rest over and gave him a hug, man, because that came from the heart.
Yeah.
You know, it came from the heart, and I really believe that, you know, if I work and get back, you know, where we was with people like him and Mr. Hunt.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Hunt meant so much to me because he was he was the greatest owner that I've ever played for. It's no hands down. And I just love him and Norma so wonderful, because they are the epitome of where this team is at and where we're going. We have a great owner in Clark, man. And there's no doubt him and his wife, they do a wonderful job with it. But, man, if you look back, this owner we had, his dad was the epitome gentleman that you ever couldn't ever put your eyes on. And he was very smart way before his time. And I say that because he told me, he told me right before he passed, and my mother, when I was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2006, he sat next to my mom and he pointed to her and he said, you know what, that's my guy. He said, I wouldn't have missed this for a world. And later he went on and passed. It was his last football game at his stadium. And that means a lot to me, man. And I can tell the world's like, you know what, you look at these owners, you know, and the investment that they made and how much the teams are worth, it's way beyond that. You know, they all have a heart and they all believe in and caring for people, and players feel like that. You know,
yeah.
Once you get to know the individual, it's from the heart, and you know, this is a great opportunity for kids to take it to the next level and to make a good living. So big ups to all the owners.
Well, what's interesting, too, is I think Kansas City, just as you mentioned, the Hunt family, yeah. they seem so beloved by former players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you. You're from Louisiana. You yep. played for multiple teams. You settled back down here in Kansas City. You go around a lot of the, you know, Chiefs ambassadors. It's the same story. You know, Grunny is from Chicago.
Sure.
And he still is here in Kansas yeah. City and is a huge ambassador. I think it just speaks volumes about the organization. Obviously, you mentioned Mr. Davis and yeah. just a couple others as well. But what is it about Kansas City and the organization that really separates itself?
Well, like I speak back to what Mr. Hunt said, he said that he wanted to have his players around him at all times, and he really wanted to make the players feel like once they left that they still was a part of the legacy that he started. And he really was a player's owner. I mean, he was that type of guy. And I know Clark feels the same way about the players he's developing and getting the trust and learning and winning with championships. So it's just, you know, it's going to be – it's just a part of it, you know. It's a part of the where we're going at, you know, in life. And man, if I you just think about it, if our world can be, like football, and just like and be happy and don't take everything the wrong way, how bad a country could we have? You know, it's yeah. like, you know, so much hatred out there, but yet, you know, I just believe that, you know, God put us here for a reason and a purpose. You know, I got to walk the walk, man, and you know, I just constantly pray for people that don't have, and unfortunately, the ones that you know that do have, and how they can give back to the world, and that's why I teach my kids every day.
Yeah. Neil Smith, Chiefs Hall of Famer.
Thank you
so much for being here, man. This
I appreciate
awesome.
You. I got one more thing to say. I want to give big ups to my son that just won the 6A championship. You know, the Lee Summit,
hey.
Liberty North Eagles down at the University of Missouri. So
there we go.
Up to the Eagles, man.
MIZ too, University of Missouri. There
well,
we go.
Well, they played that, but they played that, but yeah, that's what we got. That's where he won his Sun State title at, and so big ups to the Eagles.
Thank you again to Chiefs Ring of Honor Neil Smith. This was the KC Legend Show right here at Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway. Until next Monday, we are out.